You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
We're our post recording. The guys are outside drinking and smoking and what have you. And we just did this review for the new Melissa McCarthy movie. And I just wanted to say thank you for all of your support. Thank you so much for just being here for us, OneOfUs.net. I want to say Oscar Blues, wow, big support to them. I'm drinking a Dale's Pale Ale right now. Go to the Oscar Blues Brewery in Austin, Texas, or in Denver, Colorado. Man, this beer is so good. Marcos, is the beer good?
I don't know. I've had about five. I'll let you know after the sixth one.
But you're pretty sure it's good.
I'm leaning towards good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is pretty good, and I love it. And thank you to all your subscribers as well. You are what makes the site happen. Let's get on with the review here for Life of the Party. Yeah, it was a tough one. Check it out. Movie asserts at one point that Christina Aguilera is the voice of a generation. And I assert that if you believe that this is even possibly true, that this is indeed the movie for you. You should see this movie. The Life of the Party, Life of the Party is going to be totally for you. And I'm going to assume that you're a late 30s to mid 40s mom. I'm just going to assume that's you.
No late 30s mom thinks Christina Aguilera is the voice of her generation.
This is for the 40 and 50-year-old moms.
Even those don't think that Christina
Aguilera
is the voice of their generation.
No, they don't think that. But they think Melissa McCarthy is the voice of their generation.
You know what that is? That line just had a blank in the original script.
Yeah.
And then just whatever actor or whatever singer they could get.
Yeah.
They would just put that name in there.
What musician can we get that might fit in this definition of this?
Because what generation actually would say that? Period.
Because this is definitely not for a film directed at college-age girls, even though it likes to think that it's got equal sort of, like,
it
balance
wants to play that
two.
Demographic game.
Because
it's PG-13.
Right.
And I assert that had this movie been rated R, it might have pushed it into a more interesting direction.
But that,
here
that
it feels like they played it safe to appease everybody.
But that's the thing is, it might have been a funny or a funny at all movie, but if it had been rated R, it wouldn't have hit with the audience it was directed at, which is people who think that Daniel Steele was the high point of literature. You know, it's inoffensive to a fault. And it's tragically sweet to a fault.
It feels focus tested within an inch of its life.
It does. What we've got here is Melissa McCarthy being directed by her own husband, Ben Falcone, and written by the two of them, which is
like a Batman movie.
Which is never a good... If you've seen Tammy or The Boss, then you know that's not such a great thing. And Melissa McCarthy plays the mom's mom. She wears mom sweaters. She has mom hair. She just
tells
never...
mom jokes.
She tells mom... Well, this whole movie is just a big, mom,
a big
joke.
And
she's happily and sadly dropping off her daughter, Maddie, played by Molly Gordon, off at college for her senior year, her graduating year at her sorority. She's all sad. And on the way out, her husband, played by the usually funny Matt Walsh, not in this case, says, I fell in love with someone else. I'm going to leave you. She's devastated. She doesn't know what to do. And she realizes, hey, wait a minute. I never finished college. I dropped out midway through my senior year. Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back to the same college I went to before, which is the college where my daughter goes. I'm going to do my best to, you know, not smother her. Because they make a point of her going, like, I don't want to smother you. I don't want to, you know, nobody wants their mom around. I get it. But she also is kind of a clingy mom at the same time. I mean, she's like, I just literally want to go here just to like, finish my college degree, to do that. Something I never felt like I ever got to accomplish. And all of her friends, her daughter's friends, totally and instantly fall head over heels, basically, in love with her mom. Much to, initially, her daughter's chagrin, but, like, shortly she gets into it and is like, okay, you're right, my mom is awesome. Let's support her and let's teach her how to do college life. Let's take her to parties where she promptly hooks up with the hottest guy at the entire party who falls mysteriously, madly in love with her.
I guess. Some guys like the older ladies.
Played by Luke Benward. And it basically, the movie just kind of goes through the motions of following up on all of the 80s party, like, movie cliches, only with not even edging towards offensiveness. Just sort of right in the middle of a Midwestern trickly sweet story with nary a plot thread to be found.
I like this movie a lot better when it was called Back to School and starred Rodney
King. I was thinking that too, actually.
The whole time.
Because it has the same... Look, there's two kinds of jokes. Oh no, that's a great little gem of the 80s. And there's two ways to tell a story like this. I mean, it's a pretty classic a generation gap comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And either you have a parent go back to school where their child is at and then tries to be the coolest person in the room and fails miserably, thus humiliating their child, or they go in, suddenly become the coolest person in the room, which also humiliates their child. I'll give this movie credit for not going down that route because I really thought that's where it's going. I'm like, oh, okay, they're being supportive. There's some little message about, yeah, girls shouldn't be, you know, mean to one another, blah, blah, blah. We got to stick together. But that's where the focus testing comes in. That's where it feels like we need another girl power moment. We need another a moment of sisterhood. We need another sort of crass joke, but not too crass, because then we have to follow it up with some sweet little message. This is a movie that wants to make you giggle a little bit at something slightly naughty, but then it's going to send you home with cookies and a nice warm sweater.
This is the type of naughty that can play at like 7 p.m. on primetime television.
You can take your mom to this.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, that's who it's meant for, once again. This is
and
meant
it is
for
meant
your
mom.
My mom would love this film.
Yeah. I mentioned this earlier, but I try not to get too personal on these things, but my mother dropped out of college shortly after she had me, and my parents got divorced, and that limited a lot of her options.
You realize all that happened was your fault. You
and,
did
I totally realized that. I've come to terms with it.
From all those Don Rodney Dangerfield movies.
To her credit, she hasn't taken it out on me. But so I'm like, okay, that is a thing that happens. It's not inherently ridiculous. I understand that pain of feeling like there's that one thing that just, if only you could have done it, you could have gotten that closure. So I was willing, because of my own personal experience, to go, you know what? I'm not going to hate this movie instantly. I'm going to see where it takes me. And frankly, you know, I thought they squandered a decent premise, because I don't think it's a bad vehicle for Melissa McCarthy. And I think the actors in here across the board are genuinely good trying to commit to this material. It's just not very strong.
You've got a lot of good people in this, like Gillian Jacobs. You know, she appears one of the sorority sisters. I lean over to Martin. I'm like, isn't she like 35?
I'm glad they explained that though.
Yeah, they were like, oh, well, she was kind of famous because she was in a coma. No one could explain for 8 years, and then came out and was there. They call her Coma Girl, which it, like every other sort of thing that felt like it was just an absurd joke, isn't. It's a setup for a joke that's not funny later, or a plot device,
or at all.
Maya Rudolph plays her best friend, plays Melissa McCarthy's best friend, who actually probably does have some of the funnier moments in this film. They're all reaction moments to look how outrageous this situation is, where Maya Rudolph is just chewing up all the scenery, but she is not bad at all. Jackie Weaver and Stephen Root play Melissa McCarthy's parents.
Man, do I love Stephen Root.
But this is just it's shameful.
It's super shameful.
In this.
He's just playing crazy old man. But, you know, Stephen Root can do that in his sleep.
Chris Parnell plays the archaeology professor, who I thought for sure was going to be the one who was going to have the romantic relationship with Melissa McCarthy's character.
Again, like I said, it makes these weird choices where it's like, oh, you think we're going there. We're going to do this other thing. And I'm like, yeah, but the other thing you chose wasn't any more interesting.
No, it really wasn't. The film just kind of meanders along in its own sweet Hallmark card sort of way. You know, it's like one of the funny Hallmark cards, if you will, which is to say, not funny, but it's like a bad mom pun. If the
Lifetime Network did like a teen sex comedy set in a college only starring your mom... This is what it would have shown. This is what
starring your mom.
Starring your mom.
Well, that's the thing. Even the stuff that's naughty is like mom fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's just mildly naughty.
There is, which I won't spoil because it's the only good moment in the movie. There was one genuinely surprising moment for me in this movie.
I thought,
suddenly this movie's going to kick up another lot onto another level. And then it's quickly gone.
It was the climax of the film for me.
I was like, oh, and then I realized, oh, there's still 30 more minutes
and,
of this.
And even that scene's only really funny because of Maya Rudolph sitting there just, like, basically cheerleading
on the
scene and going and being the funny one in it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's one of those things. I guess it was funny just because despite, like, all these separate sort of, I hesitate to call them plot elements, things that are brought up that do eventually almost irritatingly, I guess payoff is the right word. And that's one that I was like, okay, I did not see that there was anything there hanging to connect to anything else.
I just didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
And it did shock me legitimately.
Well, that's supposed to be the secret of comedy, which is why it's funny. Everything else in here, you do see coming, or when it does happen, it's just not surprising in the slightest and doesn't really pay off to any great effect. It's
like the few funny lines in it that were in the trailer. I've seen that trailer so often at this point, I couldn't even laugh at any of those either.
It's one of the problems, though, is that, like, I do think the film is, like, it's one of those, there's a lot of comedies I watch that are about at this level that I'm like, I'm actually just kind of mad watching it. It's so unfunny. But it's almost like Martin told me at one point, it's like they forgot to write jokes for this thing through most of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, they just weren't even trying to write jokes. They're just coasting on the inherent silliness of Melissa McCarthy's overly sweet, like ridiculous mom character just being herself, as it were, who is cute. It's not offensive. It's cute.
Yeah.
But it's not funny.
I feel like a lot of comedies tend to make this mistake lately. I mean, there's, I don't want to say lately, it's happened for years, but whenever you get like a bunch of funny people and you think, oh, we'll just put a bunch of funny people in a room and just roll camera and magic will happen. And you know what? I don't care how much improv you throw at it, how much test focusing or reshoots you do. If you don't have a really strong story, your comedy's not going to land. And you have to kind of write some jokes as part of the story. And to me, the best moments in this film, like you said, are probably Maya Rudolph. And you kind of know in the script, it probably just said Maya's character reacts and they just let her go.
Yeah.
That works because it was an inherently funny situation that she's a part of. That happens in other scenes and you're like, yes, they're reacting and their reaction is amusing, but because they're reacting to something that isn't very funny, it feels like kind of a waste of my time.
Yeah.
Which is too bad, you know?
I mean,
I didn't hate it, but it's really lackluster.
And a lot of just weird decisions throughout it. Like we were talking earlier about Gillian Jacobs, whose character, like, is the movie trying to say she has brain damage from the coma? Is she just stupid? Because sometimes she is, sometimes she's not. And then every time anyone else is having a conversation on screen that she's in camera for, she's making these bizarre faces the whole time.
Yeah,
I was like, what is she doing?
It's like she's kind of permanently cross-eyed throughout the movie. And I feel like she made a choice and she thought, well, that's funny. That's a funny choice. But the thing is, she doesn't have any... Again,
it's like
an actor trying to compensate for the lack of material.
It felt like there's a deleted scene in there somewhere.
Maybe.
That delivered some amount of, this is what's going on with her that now just seems weird watching.
Make no mistake, even though this dragged at times, it's barely 90 minutes long, so you know when this comes out on DVD,
it's 145
minutes.
Yeah. It was an hour and 45 minutes.
All right. Well, that would explain why it felt longer than 90 minutes.
My favorite thing about
the
description...
But you know the DVD is going to have like an extra 20 minutes of deleted scenes.
Oh, absolutely. But my favorite thing about the description of some of the characters on the list that we have here is it just says, sorority sister with issues...
Another
for like half
sister
of them.
There were maybe about two sisters too many.
Yeah, well, that was the
well,
sisters
like half
were,
of them don't do anything.
They were just kind of they're just the girl who kind of like has certain things she says that irritates people and has problems with this.
But
and
they
this
all
is the
do
girl that does that, you know. And you're just like, okay, so we don't really care about them. They're just there to have people to go with the mom to things and go, wow, you're great. As well as there's two bad girls.
There's a couple of mean girls.
Right out of every 80s movie. And honestly, in a film where every other character in this, except for the ex-husband and his new lady, are so sweet, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, are just so absolutely like, God, your mom is the best lady in the world, which is not what
which
would happen.
Comes out of nowhere.
You're just like, those two characters... do feel they stick out like a sore thumb.
Because to me,
movie.
It felt like somebody said, you know, can we, you know, we have this message about girls being nice. Can't we just have these girls, instead of giving them some horrible comeuppance, just have them all make up and be friends? I'm like, Okay.
I was rooting for Make Out.
I have expected some of them to make out for some reason.
Well, I mean, I don't think that would be a good choice, but at least it would have been a choice.
Like the mean girl in this is played by Debbie Ryan, who, as far as I know, came from the Disney Channel originally, because my niece watched her show a lot.
I mean, yeah, she did. But then again, most young actors and actresses come from the Disney Channel.
Yeah, but
days,
like,
it seems like
it was one of those things where it's like they gave her jack shit to do. They like, but you can say that about literally every side character in this entire film.
They just have really nothing to do except for like they'll have like one thing they'll say that's a quirk about them that eventually will come back around in the third act,
like the weird
to in some
roommate
minor way, like
serves
run
no
into the
purpose,
plot. Yeah, she's
except
got a weird
for one plot.
She's got a weird
towards the end.
Weird
who played
the roommate? That was like, okay.
I mean, she was actually interesting, except
for like a
given
minute.
Nothing to do. And I'm like, oh, you're not going to do anything
Gardner
to this character.
Yeah, Heidi Gardner, who is on
no
Saturday
idea
Night Live. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
You know, but given nothing to do. And, you know, except for one moment at the end, and you're like, oh, I get it.
Well,
this is your function in the movie.
It's the rule that if you were on Saturday Night Live and you make a movie, you have to cast at least one current relatively unknown Saturday Night Live cast member in your film.
So.
That's
sure,
just how the rules go.
Happened with Kate McKinnon.
So everybody, let's do our best impression of Melissa McCarthy's character in this film. Go ahead, Marco.
You can't see it. It's a visual, but I am kind of, I do feel a bit bloated.
Yeah.
And I think I'm showing.
Is that your impression? Okay.
Yeah, my impression is my leg gave out.
Your what?
My leg gave out.
That's your impression?
That's my impression.
You guys are weak at this improv thing.
Well, it's better than her acting,
I
assume.
I just don't feel inspired enough.
Oh, honey. Oh, it's fine. Oh, it's wonderful. You're so wonderful.
Richard
this
brought
is
it up.
So wonderful.
This
on our way
been
out
so much funnier with Betty White. If it was somebody's grandma.
Yeah.
And just let Betty White get
well
raunchy.
But the fear is Betty White's not going to live to the end of filming.
Yeah, that's probably true.
She's like 106 or something.
And again, Melissa McCarthy, I don't have a problem with her as an actress
no
or as a comedian.
She's
I
actually
just wish
been good in
they
stuff
had given her something more to do. Yeah. This is something that they, on paper, they thought, oh, this seems like a good idea. We'll find it on the set, and they did it.
I actually suspect this will make exactly as much money as I expected to, quite frankly.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I think it'll track, and they're marketing it to the exact right crowd
yeah
who are going to love this. But three dudes here, like a 20-something and two... You're 20-something,
yeah,
right?
I'm a late
20-something. And two 40-somethings. Like, this is just not,
it's not
made
for
us in the slightest right way. And no consideration was made for us in this film. And that's fine. Not everything is
for everybody.
But if
you're a middle-aged single woman whose husband left you for a realtor, you're going to love this fucking movie.
I don't even think it has to be that specific. We'll just say middle-aged single woman who, like, has, like, really still, like... has very banal tastes.
There you go.
Yeah.
If you like tchotchkes and, you know, like making, you know, casseroles and want to just feel a little dirty imagining having sex with a 20-year-old, then maybe you'll get a grin out of this movie. The rest of us, I think we were expecting something or hoping for something a little more edgy.
We'll keep going into your final thoughts there.
So we've run this movie down quite a bit. I think Chris raises a great point. This is not the movie. This movie was not designed for us. Doesn't mean you won't like it, and I won't think any less of you if you enjoy this movie.
Well, I will.
Unless you're a 20 and something year old,
you know,
then I'll be like, come on.
If this is the best movie you see all year, then you need to go see more movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's inoffensive to a fault, and that, ironically, is its fault. It could have been stronger. It's a good cast and a decent premise that's mostly squandered by just being, you know, fluffy and harmless. I give this 4 college sweaters out of 10.
Mike?
Man, this movie, I haven't felt this much pain watching a movie since I watched Dragon Ball Evolution. But this fucking movie, man. Like, there's so many good actors in this film. Like, I love Steven Root.
The only critic who will compare this movie to Dragon Ball.
You will hear me say that probably more often.
That would never cross my mind,
but
okay. But
it's because I felt physical pain watching that film, and I did the same thing in this one. But, like, because I love Steven Root as well. Like, if anyone's watching Barry right now, he's one of the best parts of that entire film, or that entire show. So seeing him in this film just be wasted is just heartbreaking because of it. Chris Parnell gets nothing. Like, I can say that pretty much. If I just start reading down the list, I can just say, gets nothing. And that will describe this film. Because, like, the daughter, my God, she's like, oh, I'm gonna be sad. Nothing. You can't even tell. She doesn't change emotions through, like, maybe once or twice in the entire film. And Melissa McCarthy, like, Richard brought up a good thing when we were on our way out. It was like, she just gives up halfway through a line sometimes. Like, as if she was just like, well... I'm going to say the line, I guess. And then they're just like, isn't that sweet? I'm like, oh my God. They're right. This is sweet to a fault, to the point where it's like nothing is happening. There's no actual, like, conflict. And when conflict arises, they fix it within, like, 20 minutes. And it's like, what was the fucking point of this film? Like Marco said, Back to School is a way better film than this. Like, if you want to watch a film that has this plot, just watch Back to School. I will, like, because that movie's amazing. This movie's awful. I have to give it 3 out of 10 times I was hoping Rodney Dangerfield would pop out of nowhere and do a triple Indian.
It would be disturbing if he did now. He'd be like, oh my God, he's a zombie!
CGI it, I don't care.
Zombie Dangerfield, he gets no respect.
Or brains.
Or brains.
You know, I was thinking about this, and I think the best thing I could say about this movie, the best way to describe it, it's like you go to a Luby's, and you get one of those little tiny mini cakes of something, like maybe it's strawberry shortcake or flan or something, and you're sitting down, you're just eating it, and you're looking around the Luby's. It's this perfect slice of banal Americanism at its most generic, with that's packed with sugar, but not much in the way of actual talent and design or structure. It's like, yeah, this is just sugar in the shape of flan. There's nothing. This is not one of the better flans I'm ever going to have in my life. It's generic, and by this afternoon, I will have forgotten about it. I haven't been to a Luby's in a long time. They even have flan. They seem too banal to even have flan.
I've never eaten the flan.
Yeah, but you know, it really is. It's just
there's
so
one nearby, I think.
Goddamn. Yeah, but that doesn't mean I want to go. I'd go to a Golden Corral before I go.
I'll call
to
my
Luby's.
Dad or something. He'll go.
Yeah, it's just so thoroughly generic, and it felt like it was written by an old computer that just entered in all these old 80s party movie scripts and then said, yeah, but take out anything that could potentially offend anyone, any sexism.
Take out all the jokes.
Which I'm not saying is bad.
Which ended up taking,
ended
out,
up
most
taking
of the
out
jokes.
All the jokes and just making it just so utterly and perfectly milquetoast that there's just nothing much that I can say about it. I'm going to give it 3 out of 10, and those 3 are just for good intentions,
yeah,
quite frankly.
Pretty much.
If you want to see a movie like this done right, see Blockers instead.
3 out of 10, probably much better Gillian Jacob movies you can watch than this if you're a fan. Because I am, and I wanted to see her do better.
Sam for Steven Hurd. I want to see Steven Hurd do better.
Well, he's on Barry right now, so just watch Barry.
The check's cleared, and that allows them to do other things.
They what?
The check's cleared, so that allows them to do other things. I don't begrudge them for taking this gig.
Oh, I never begrudge an actor. I just feel bad when they're in something that might bring down their star rating a little bit. And this could very well end up launching Gillian Jacobs into a successful career of completely terrible, boring films designed
now
to be as inoffensive as
possible. Now she's
getting
all these scripts to play comatose girls.
That's just her thing. Everyone's like, you're the coma girl, right?
Isn't that just how Jessica Jones starts it?
You have a great following on Twitter.
That's going to be the spinoff. It's going to be the life of Coma Girl.